This is XTP Media.
Eventfire Solutions is proud to support Extended. You can find us at eventfiresolutions.co.uk. Enjoy the programme.
You're listening to Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 45 of Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station. Joining me today is Editor-in-Chief of Aerospace Magazine, Tim Robinson. Tim, how are you?
I'm good. Hello, everybody.
And we do have an executive editor of Global Aviation Resource with us, but he's not a well man. Gareth, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. I am a bit croaky and I do have a sore chest and the antibiotics to prove it. But for reasons that will become clear, I certainly wasn't going to miss this opening bit anyway.
No, appreciate that. And we'll see how you get on. But Gareth may gently leave us at some time during the during the recording.
Away.
Yeah. And we also have a guest presenter today, journalist and aviation blogger from Seattle, Isaac Alexander. Isaac, welcome to Extended.
Good day to everybody.
Well, it's great to have you. We're flattered to have you. We know you're a social media king, and we want to talk to you a little bit about Jet City Star later on in the program. But do jump in and enjoy the show, and we're delighted to have you with us.
Honored to be here, and let's get going.
Right, before we go on to the news, we've got a lot for you today, but we just felt that we had to explain why we weren't here last week. It was a very sad week in the UK, and unfortunately, we lost some people. Gareth, very, very sad weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what this sort of cruel twist of fate is, where these things tend to happen in sort of little bunches, but it was an awful weekend last weekend for lots of people. From a purely personal point of view, Kev Wyman, who was killed when his nat tragically crashed at Carfest, was somebody that I knew, somebody who had done some work for and had photographed and had met at lots of air shows along the way. And it's absolutely tragic when it's, you know, when it's somebody you're not close to. Kev wasn't a, you know, best friend or anything like that, but he's somebody that I certainly could have picked the phone up and called. But, you know, for somebody like that to pass away, it just really makes you sit back and think, wow, you know. And it, a lot of people, I think it brought home to them that, you know, every weekend from an air show perspective, we've got guys and girls going out flying, you know, vintage aircraft, propeller aircraft, jet aircraft, complicated aircraft for our entertainment. And it's dangerous, and accidents will happen along the way. We know that, but it doesn't stop it being any more shocking when it does. So from a perspective of Kev, just from, and I know I speak for everybody on this call and everybody on the team and hopefully everybody listening, huge condolences to Kev's family, his friends and his colleagues. Absolutely tragic. And all of our thoughts are with you at what must be a impossibly difficult time. And that, of course, was followed with, you know, we had a Spitfire crash at Biggin Hill. Unfortunately, Dan Griffith, another very popular figure on the UK air show scene, you know, he made incredible performance. He lost power soon after takeoff in a Spitfire, a Mark 19, I think it was. Aircraft was very badly damaged. Dan fortunately got away with minor injuries. So, well, you know, well played, Dan. And, you know, aircraft can be repaired, and it will be. But then that was followed by a Russian Mi-28 helicopter crashing at an air show in Russia. You know, horrible circumstances. And, you know, as with the Nat crash, it's an air show. You know, the thing these days, it's all captured, isn't it, by thousands of people. So it's all very much in the public eye. So it was a horrible weekend for the air show world. And thoughts with everybody affected, and you know, best wishes to all of you.
Yeah, I can only support the words that Gareth has said there. At this time, it is very difficult to find the right words to say how we feel, but some people did miss us last week, and for lots of reasons this as well, we just felt it wasn't the right time to record. So Gareth, thanks very much for that, and if you do have to jump out at some time, please do, and our best wishes to you as well. Let's take a look then at what's caught our eye in the news. Okay, then before we get started on some of the nice meteor stories, Tim, a story has come out about Heathrow Airport. We won't ponder on it because it's old news, but apparently most people in a poll wanted no expansion at either Heathrow or Gatwick. They were following Boris's interest in a brand new airport. It's just not going to happen, is it?
Seems a little bit. Yeah, kind of optimistic, or I don't know, maybe it was something how the question was put to them, that, you know, I don't know, Boris Ireland or something new. You know, Boris is still fighting a rear guard action, saying that sort of, you know, third runway at Heathrow is still the wrong choice and they should be doing that, etc., etc. Davis Commission has come up with the choices. You know, Heathrow is the primary one. You know, third runway, and it's now in the politicians' court. Yeah. There's been reviews, there's been recommendations since the end of the Second World War, really.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on then, because that's a story that's got lots of legs. We'll be talking for many years. Exciting times. Concorde Mark II. Airbus files plans for a new supersonic jet in the Daily Telegraph. Oh, is this ever going to happen? What do you think about this one then, Tim?
It's a patent, okay, and it's a little bit of a sort of a kind of a silly season story because things are a bit slow, and so the patent was picked up because someone made a nice sort of whizzy YouTube video of it. It was actually revealed, or a similar concept was revealed in 2011 at the Paris Air Show with Zest, using rockets, ramjets, and normal jet turbojets to get up to Mach 4.5 and you know, get across the Atlantic very quickly. So, you know, sometimes companies have patents on things to kind of close off an avenue of research to other companies or other, you know, R&D. But for my mind, it looks a bit sort of like hideously complicated.
Just before we started recording, Isaac, you mentioned another design. What was that one?
That was the Aireon, which is a Nevada-based company that has been shopping around a supersonic design. Basically, they want to Aireon wants to control the patents, if you will, and then another manufacturer would actually build the aircraft. They partnered with Gulfstream in the past, I believe, and they've talked on and on with other manufacturers. And I believe it was last year that they signed a deal with Airbus to co-design some type of supersonic transport. So we don't know what. You know, they're more talking about the a business jet design.
Right, okay.
Is that right, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a biz jet, so 8 to 12 passengers. They've still got the design. Okay. Yeah. You know, it seems to have done a lot of work on the design. I think, you know, obviously the sticking point is funding for that. You know, getting some good backing behind it. Still at the moment sort of a paper aeroplane, so we'll see what happens.
Right, okay. There's still some stories flying around about the Mark 1 as well. There's a petition, I believe, to try and get that resurrected and flying again, but I can't see that getting any legs over here. So let's move on. BAE Systems, producer Typhoon, of course, in the UK, is going to have to take a production break in 2018 unless we get some more orders, Tim. This is from james.com.
Yeah, that's obviously... Typhoon has been lagging. Well, Typhoon has been lagging a little bit behind in recent contests. So the problem now is that people can sort of see the end of production coming now. So the question is, what do you do about that? obviously they're still hoping, they're still around 47, 50 aircraft. They're still hoping that Saudi Arabia will sign for. There's still other contests out there that they're hoping to win. But in order to keep the production line going, they're talking about kind of slowing down. So all eyes really on Typhoon in the next couple of years and see if they can customers to bridge that gap maybe.
Yeah.
Tim, quick question on that. So there is still four Eurofighter production lines in all the various countries, correct?
That's right. Now, this would be another option for the consortium is to say, we're actually going to rationalize our production and we're actually going to kind of say we're going to close the Spanish line, close the Italian line, or, close at least two of the lines and just run the other ones on. That's kind of, might be the logical way of going about it, but the trouble there is obviously work share and sort of international politics. So, who wants to be the first one to sort of close their production line down completely? That's a sort of tricky one, and something that the industrial partners would have to look at carefully.
I can't see the international politics working in favour of efficiencies at the moment. Anyway, moving on, but sticking with the Eurofighter Typhoon, the RAF at Coningsby invited the Indian Air Force over last week. They brought some Sukhoi 30 Mark 1s, the advanced flanker, along with some support aircraft. And then there was a frenzy of social media and media stories about the flankers wiping the floor, I think, with the Typhoons. I think the Indian leader of the group made a press statement that there were 12 kills to zero in favour of the Sukhoi 30s. Whilst I was mortified when I read the headlines, I'm not sure I can believe this, really.
Those things, sort of scoreboards from exercises, you have to always take with a pinch of salt. What are the desired training, objectives? Who's red air? Who's the blue air? Who's got missiles? Who's using their radars? Who's got AWACS support, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many ways you can set up a scenario in order to test something out or provide some kind of training objective. And sometimes people pilots will go up there and their job is just to die gallantly. Their job is to give somebody else a good target and a bit of a training learning experience. Sure. The RAF won't go out and sort of say it officially, but unofficially that wasn't the case. The 12-0 scoreboard. Gareth?
I'm afraid Gareth's just dropped off the call. He sadly has taken back to his bed, so we'll thank him for joining us. But Isaac?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of chime in and stuff. This kind of reminds me of in 2000, I believe it's 6 or 7, when India first came over here with their Su-27s to Red Flag and as well as that was the same year as when the Rafales came over as well. But the key thing when India was over here is they did not turn on those radars when they were here. But the Rafales kept trying to ping when the Su-27s would take off. For whatever reason, the Rafales kept following them, trying to get radar signatures and stuff from them, trying to see what intelligence they can gather from it. So, but there was no official score that was over here from that standpoint. But like Tim has said, though, for these exercises, it's a great learning experience, and there is some some of the fighters and stuff up there have to do dedicated. Their job is to die in the simulation in order for someone else to learn. And it's everybody learning from that aspect on, how their equipment works and what's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I think there is also history of the Indians on previous exercises claiming a full house kill as well. I think we need to take it with a pinch of salt.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, let's leave the news there then, and we'll take a little break. And after the break, we'll come and talk to Isaac.
Event Fire Solutions is an independent fire and rescue service providing both preventative and reactive emergency services across the UK. As well as our main event management, we provide the support and equipment to deliver a safe and risk-free event. From fire appliances to medical vehicles, our fully trained and accredited staff will make your event a true success. If you need risk-related advice, investigation, medical or fire training, then we can deliver this for you. From the office to the airfield, we have the experience and the accreditation and most of all the skills to make your workplace event safe and risk-free. To find out more of how we can help you, look us up at eventfiresolutions.co.uk.
I'm Peter Dixon, and I listen to Extended.
So, Isaac, first question I want to ask you is, where does Jet City Star come from?
Jet City Star, well, I was in the Navy and stuff at the time. Got out of the Navy, I was an aviation mechanic from 04 to 2010. I worked on F-18 jet engines on both the C&D model as well as the ENF model. So that would be GE-404 and GE-414 models. And then I kind of had a passion for aviation and, and I just needed kind of a name and stuff that I was trying to think of. And I was looking back in the history of Seattle. I was moving back to Seattle from NAS Oceana. And I came up with Jet City was a term, you know, when the 707 started production here in the 50s, Jet City was a term. But I wanted to include, there's been, you know, noticeable space things as well. So I came up with Jet City Star, kind of the name stuff came from that aspect, combining two things together. So I came up with that handle and launched it in 2010 and been running with it ever since. So,
And you're very active. You're very active, particularly on Twitter. What attracts you to being so active on social media?
I just have a passion for aviation type of things. I kind of run my Twitter as a high powered, if you call, for lack of a better term, a fire hose of information. It is not for everybody, yet, but if I try to I like to keep updated with what's going on in the aviation field. Maybe it comes from, I grew up right next to SeaTac Airport. So every morning when I get up, I had a huge view of the entire airport there for me. So aviation has kind of always been in my blood, if you could say, or, you know, I've been breathing it always in and from the jet fumes. And I just love seeing planes travel from point A to point B. I just always get a kick out of it.
And of course, not everything in the Seattle area is about Boeing, but most of it is.
Correct.
what is it like living in that part of the world? Is the aviation and aerospace news dominated by Boeing?
For the most part, yes. I mean, they are the biggest, I think the last count was 85,000 people in the state of Washington alone. Just the state of Washington is employed by it. It is the biggest employer in the state. And then what, you know, Microsoft, you could say the next kind of global business company, I believe, is number two. Apologies and stuff right now for the background noise. it's a clock and stuff. I can't turn it off right now. But yeah, it's for the most part. And then all the suppliers here in the area, we have Electro Impact, which is a company that makes the machines that make the planes. They are a big supplier and stuff is here.
Right.
And as well as Zodiac Aerospace, which is a French company, but they've been buying up a lot of the interior companies that have been based here in the state of Washington throughout the state. And they're one of the, they are, I believe, Zodiac Aerospace now is the second largest employer, aerospace employer in the state after Boeing.
Wow.
Okay. Now, it's not all about Boeing. And as I mentioned earlier, you are a journalist in the area and you had a very interesting visit to an aircraft manufacturer I wouldn't have associated with that part of the world.
Yes. The state has been trying to, especially with the suppliers, is to find other alternatives to Boeing. You know, the city has been very close to Boeing, was very close to Boeing until about 2000, about 15 years ago, is when they moved corporate headquarters from Seattle to Chicago. So you learned is Boeing's not going to love us and stuff, love the city and stuff anymore because the corporate leadership of the company has moved. So we need to move beyond Boeing and try to grow the aerospace industry in this region. This past Monday, it was announced, or I got to go to the opening of Mitsubishi Aircraft's new Seattle engineering office that is opening up in Georgetown, which is just north of Boeing Field here in Seattle. And what the purpose of this office is to help support the flight testing design of the final design of the Mitsubishi, specifically the MRJ-90, which is a 94-seat regional jet that will be doing flight testing in the state.
So let me ask this question then. This is the obvious question: is why is a Japanese regional airliner company testing a new regional airliner in America?
The basic reason is airspace is the number one answer, and stuff I can give for you that. Basically, the airspace around Japan right now is congested beyond belief with both commercial and as well as with military obligations. So they don't have the space, and they, and another reason is number two, experience. They do not have experience. So what Mitsubishi Aircraft has done is hire a Seattle-based company called Aerotech. And basically they're acting as a subcontractor. And what Aerotech is going to be responsible for is flight testing and getting the certifications with both the FAA and all the other government agencies throughout the world. So they, it'd be good to fly, and first delivery will be in 2017. Mitsubishi is going to be sending four regional, let me just back up real quick. MRJ's first flight will take place in either September, October of this year, 2015. There will be four after that. Between April and June of 2016 is when four MRJs will be coming over to Washington State and will be forming flight testing for 1 year's time in order to get all their certification done.
Isaac, is the aircraft that's going to fly later this year, is that going to fly then in Japan?
They're building, Mitsubishi is building five test aircraft for flight operations. One will stay, and the one that stays in Japan is already being painted in All Nippon Airways colors. The four other ones will be painted in the Mitsubishi house colors, for lack of a better term. Were the ones that will be coming over here. Now, they did not state how they would be, if they were going to do ferry flights over here or if they're going to actually transport them by ship over here and then do the flying.
And Isaac, what's your sense of the kind of MRJ's appeal? The aircraft has been a bit sort of delayed already. In terms of its sort of breakout appeal, this is Japan's sort of civil aerospace's biggest project since YS-20 or YS-15?
That is correct.
Turboprop. So they've already got sort of orders from SkyWest, Eastern. Are they confident this? Do they see more orders from outside Japan coming?
Basically, the CEO, Mitsubishi Aircraft, when he spoke last Monday, is that, his sales people are working really hard right now, but he doesn't foresee any future sales right now until that first aircraft flies.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of apprehension. People just do not want to put their money down, and I can understand that. Until that first aircraft flies, you can see and stuff how those new geared turbofan engines from Pratt & Whitney are going to do on that aircraft. Because it really slices into, it's competing with Bombardier and Embraer's regional jets in that market. Now, since it's a clean sheet design, it should, economically wise, it should, it should beat those, the legacy carriers, legacy aircraft manufacturers in that market. But, we'll see if they're able to deliver in that aspect. And, Mitsubishi has its work cut out for it, just like Boeing, previously with the Dreamliner having all its production problems. MRJ, unfortunately, seems to be falling in that footsteps. And the CEO said, we have to figure it out and get it to our customers on time. Otherwise, we're going to have the same problems.
Yeah.
And they have firm orders of over 200 aircraft, and they have order options for 400. And the last order that they received was Japan Airlines earlier this year in January.
Is it a cultural thing? Because we just sort of feel slightly unfamiliar with that. Rather, it's an egotistical sell, isn't it? Aircraft, it really does play to the ego to have the latest, to have the best, and that sort of thing. And I just get the impression from everything I've heard and from what you're saying that they're just calmly going about their business to deliver the aircraft, make sure it operates effectively, and take it from there. Whereas some other manufacturers have gone hell for leather to try and sell it. The programs have been delayed. The aircraft have been delayed. There's been problems in the tests. And that's not led to a happy marketplace looking to buy those aircraft.
Yeah. And, Mitsubishi doesn't, you know, the best example I come to is go back to the Boeing with the Dreamliner aspect is what it took a long time for Boeing to actually publicly acknowledge it. And they still wouldn't publicly acknowledge the problems of what was happening with the Dreamliner and being what the main holdup was Alenia with the horizontal stabilizers, I believe. And then, you know, Mitsubishi is not calling out any of their suppliers right now as to what is the issue right now, what's causing the main delays. They're just not in the business of calling out their suppliers or even internally, if it's internally inside Mitsubishi itself, what the problems and the holdups are. They admitted they do not have experience and they've taken too long, you know, getting that experience back. So, I mean, that they're having to pay for it now. Aerotech, the company, I don't foresee really any problems right now with on Aerotech's side getting the certification done. It's just the problems right now is just getting the aircraft, you know, doing the ground tests that they're currently doing in Japan and Nagoya and getting those tests and stuff done so they can finally do that first flight. Because that cannot come soon enough for them.
I think they're definitely going about it the right way because obviously, I mean, the thing that they are, I wouldn't say sort of fighting against, but they are like an unknown quantity for an airline customers as well. You know, are they going to, you know, one, are they going to deliver on time? But two, are they going to be able to support it? You know, there's a sort of big question mark over the kind of, you know, well, you know, are you going to get the same sort of customer service that you would from Airbus or Boeing or Embraer, you know, once you buy into this new aircraft? So anything you can do along the way to kind of reassure and say, right, we're going to go to the US, we're going to go to Moses Lake, we're going to use the same flight test people that Boeing use, et cetera, to reassure customers. I mean, that's going to be a positive step on your part in doing that.
Yeah, sounds exciting. Anyway, moving on, Isaac, you were telling us just before we started recording that you'd been to a pretty impressive air show. Tell us about that.
Usually here in the Seattle area every year, we have a big community celebration called Seafair. And one aspect of Seafair during the last weekend of the month-long events is our Seafair air show, and as well as there's hydroplane racing, which is boats on water that race up to 200 miles per hour. And then during that, on Lake Washington, which is just east of Seattle. And then there's an air show during that. I went on Friday of the show and got to see, traditionally we have various, they had an F-22 demonstration there, and that I cannot believe the volume from one F-22 is louder than the entire Blue Angels all six F-18s. It is unbelievable the volume that comes from that thing.
Yeah.
We also had the Breitling jet team was here for the very first time. They're doing their North American tour this year. And I didn't realize last month in June that they announced that they're actually going to be taking 2 years off touring in Europe. And they're going to be touring next year as well in North America. So I might get a chance to see them once again. Very, very impressive team. I really like seeing the L-39s perform here.
Have the Red Bull Red Bull Air Race, has that ever gone to sort of Seattle way?
No, the Red Bull Air Race has not been held anywhere in the Northwest. The closest has been down in Nevada, it definitely was in Las Vegas, and I can't remember if it was in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, or not. Those two would have been the closest locations it's been to Seattle area, which surprises me that it has not been here or up just north across the border in Vancouver yet. Those would be fantastic to see as well. And then this weekend and stuff in this region is the Abbotsford Air Show, which is the largest air show in Canada, is this weekend. That's where the Breitling jet team is now. From seeing all these, the small jets teams, I know they're, you know, you guys get to see them all the time, but I would love to see the Red Arrows make a West Coast appearance over here in North America.
we talk all the time, Isaac, about how fortunate we are to see these teams. And I think it's becoming more and more apparent as some of the aircraft we're familiar with disappear, how lucky we have been. So we do try to hang on to them, but I suppose it's all money and prestige and things like that that drives it all now.
Yes, very, yeah, very, very much so. The Blue Angels have a very, very hard, this region really, really loves its Blue Angels. And we lost them a couple of years ago to sequestration. You know, they weren't able to come because of congressional funding. And then in the 90s, they had a little fight with the FAA. Due to due to how their airspace and how they were flying their doing their performance, that the FAA didn't like it. And but they were able to come to an agreement, and they've been here since the I believe since the 1950s continuously, and those are great traditions that I hope continue for many, many years beyond when I leave this earth, and future generations can enjoy them as well.
Yeah, with your wish to see the Red Arrows, I have the reverse wish to see the Blue Angels, I can assure you. It's on my bucket list for sure, for sure. Tim, have you ever seen them?
I have not. No, that is definitely on my bucket list as well, as to see the Blue Angels.
Well, Isaac, what else is going on for you in the coming weeks and months? Anything exciting?
I'm going to be attending later this month. There is a group here in Seattle that's devoted towards space entrepreneurship. Basically, the promoting the new space industry. That's kind of goes along the aspect of expanding beyond Boeing here in the region. We have a lot of interesting space companies here located in the area. One is Planetary Resources, which is about mining asteroids. And there's another, one of the more famous ones, SpaceX, is launching an engineering office here in the Seattle area. And they're going to be building satellites for a new wireless service, so you can get internet over your satellites instead of having to have a landline. I'm going to be going to a space entrepreneur group here to try to main mission is trying to promote companies, people and businesses that want to launch a company or devoted towards using space for making money, is to do that. So I'm planning to network there and stuff with people. So that's kind of my next project here in the next few weeks, meeting up with them.
Well, you've hit us at a time when we're planning in our next space episode, so we may be coming back to have a chat with you.
And then also my other final thing is next year, I was asked by one of the organizers of the Aviation Geek Fest, which I'm sure you've heard of on the airport. It's the annual event devoted towards promoting aviation here in the Seattle area. I've been asked to join the planning committee for that for next year. So I'm pretty excited about
doing that. Isaac, do you just want to, for those who don't know about that, can you just tell us a little bit about what happens at that? Because I was invited last year and sadly I couldn't get there. But this is another one of those bucket list items for anyone interested in aviation and aerospace, isn't it?
Yes. Was started and founded by the Future Flight, Sandy Ward, who has been a guest on the Airplane Geeks podcast. If you want to look up that episode to talk with her. She started this event in 2009 as an event to help, another event for the museum to help promote what they do. What is unique about this event type of thing? For the most part, it's been a one day. It started off as a one day track where you go to the Future Flight and some of the surrounding museums around there, like Paul Allen's Flying Heritage Collection, as well as John Sessions' Historic Flight Foundation, you got free admission. You got admission into a reduced rate admission to go to those museums. And then you go back to the Future Flight, and then you would take a bus, and you would go over to the Boeing, the biggest, largest building in the world by volume is the Boeing factory, where they make four different models of aircraft, the 747, 767, 787, and a 777. And you would actually get to walk the factory floor tour, which is not something you cannot do if you take the regular Boeing tour from Future Flight. I mean, you're just like an employee. This is the only event that's held annually that a member of the public can walk the factory tour, and that's what makes it so special, to being able to walk the entire length of a mile-long building and be along the airplanes as they're being built. It's very, very incredible from that aspect. Then it expanded a couple of years ago, and then it included the Renton tour, which is where all the 737s are made. And you get to walk, the way that building is designed, you don't quite get to walk the factory tour, but you're within 3 feet of the end of winglets of the aircraft. And that's, I mean, truly this event is the only event you can do as a member of the public. You can get into that. The Boeing does not offer public tours of the Renton facility. So, I mean, the Boeing event. Now, here's the thing about the Aviation Geek Fest is that we're coming in order for the event to grow, they need to create more programming. Boeing has said that they've limited it to 200 passes each, that 200 passes to be able to go to walk the Boeing facilities. So Sandy and the planning committee's problem or solution for this year is to create more program, alternative programming, so people, so more people and stuff can come and join it for next year. So we're trying to come up with more, getting more of our suppliers here in the region involved, type of thing. We can take more tours. Alaska Airlines is based here. Last year they offered a tour at SeaTac Airport.
Mitsubishi. You should ask Mitsubishi.
Well, unfortunately, the Mitsubishi aircraft will not be here until after Aviation Geek Fest 2016. So, but there is a chance for 2017 that there is that chance to get that. So that I'll be shooting for definitely involving Mitsubishi for 2017. But for 2016, it's just not going to happen. Yeah. Cause we found out that, their aircraft, it was going to be January through through March that the MRJ was going to come, but then I got pushed to April. So, but, yeah, we got United Airlines flew in a Dreamliner last year to SeaTac Airport and we got a tour and if Airbus wants to fly a special aircraft over to, go over to a SeaTac Airport as well for the day, we'll happily and stuff enjoy that as well. we just found out this past week that the Pacific Northwest is finally going to get A380 service up in Vancouver, BC. British Airways is going to start regular service soon.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I was intrigued actually. I was quite impressed to see that they could get the loads on that route. I was genuinely a little surprised, but I'm sure the business is there. They wouldn't be doing it.
Well, I you know, and I know Emirates now Emirates for the last 3 years now has had 777 service from their airport in Dubai to Seattle, and they just added a second flight each day, so they have two flights per day. Our international terminal here at SeaTac just can't accommodate yet an A380 plane without some major infrastructure improvements type of thing. So
right.
We could have A380 service already type of here, but you know, they're expanding, majorly expanding here, the airport here at SeaTac. So that'll be a couple of years and stuff before that's going to be able to pass, but we can definitely have, we have Lufthansa doing 747-8 intercontinental service. So we're quite happy with that.
Well, Isaac, thanks very much for that update from your part of the world. Of course, you are calling us today into the show from the Northwest Seaboard. Thanks very much for that. Where can we find out about you online?
Really, for the most part, just hit me up on Twitter. It's Jet City Star is all one word, and you follow me and stuff from there. I do have a website that I update occasionally. Is jetcitystar.blogspot.com, and I just write for various media outlets for things. So, and hopefully, I will have a story here for soon for somebody that both you and I know. So, we'll see.
Right, Isaac. Well, thanks very much. Do stick around. After the break, we're going to come back to Tim for the latest X10 Top 10.
Game challenge begins. Launch. Circular orbit. Rapid rendezvous. Intercept and dock with International Space Station.
All engine running. Liftoff. Tower clear.
Push the ISS to higher orbit. Rescue EVA astronauts. Avoid space debris. Destroy debris with missiles. Protect the ISS. For as long as possible. Deorbit. Land. Survive.
All in a day's work.
We had a pretty large bang. Hey, we had a problem here.
Post control, both autos. He's in engine command override off.
We've had shutdown.
Leo. Low Earth Orbit. A game from skyrocketcafe.com.
Hi, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's own aviation podcast. I like to listen to Extended.
And now it's time for our X10 Top 10. This year it's the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Britain. So what would be better than the extended Top 10 Battle of Britain facts, things you didn't know about the Battle of Britain. Number 10, it was a tale of two air sea rescue services. While the German air sea rescue service in the Channel was well organised with floating rescue buoys and seaplanes, The RAF lacked a dedicated airsea rescue service during the battle, one only being set up in 1941. At number 9, Tiger Moth Bombers. Had Operation Sea Lion, the German invasion of Britain, actually taken place, then Tiger Moth trainer biplanes would have been pressed into action as light bombers with small bombs to strike Nazi forces on the beach. At number 8, Saucepans to Spitfires. Despite the famous appeal to the public to donate scrap metal for fighter production, the RAF was never that short of Spitfires or Hurricanes, and this was just a morale-boosting propaganda exercise. The ramp-up in production rates and a highly efficient RAF repair organisation kept the front lines well supplied with aircraft. And number 7, the Phantom Heinkel 113. Several RAF reports reported encountering a mystery HE 113 fighter during the Battle of Britain. However, it was nothing more than a clever propaganda hoax developed by Goebbels to make other countries think Germany had another single-engine fighter in squadron service. At number 6, the Buffer 109 Rolls-Royce connection. Weirdly, the first Buffer 9, Messerschmitt Buffer 1 prototype in 1935 flew with a Rolls-Royce Kestrel engine, while in the 1969 Battle of Britain film, the Spanish Bouchons were also powered by Rolls-Royce Merlins, portraying the 109s, of course. At number 5, the battle was preceded by the first airborne Elint spying mission, when a German Graf Zeppelin airship conducted a couple of electronic warfare missions in the North Sea, hoping to work out the function of the mysterious aerials that appeared on the coast of the UK. They failed to realise the true significance of those radar masts. At number 4, the shabby treatment of the RAF's leaders post-battle. After winning the battle, Air Chief Marshal Hugh Downing, who just before the battle was asking whether he was able to retire or he was still needed, he was sidelined and sent on a Ministry of Aircraft Production tour of the US, where Air Vice Marshal Keith Park of 11 Group, who bore the brunt of the battle, was sent to training command. And number 3, did you know the Italians took part in the Battle of Britain, sending a handful of BR-20 bombers and CR-42 biplanes over in October? They fared badly. At number 2, Bomber and Coastal Command. They were also a key part of the battle, with Blenheims, Hamptons and Wellingtons piling on the pressure day and night. In particular, Blenheims carried out risky daylight strikes on enemy airfields in France and the Low Countries. September 2 saw the Battle of the Barges, where RAF bombers destroyed invasion barges in French ports. At number 1, it wasn't just the battle by Britons, it was an international fight. Pilots and air crew came not just from Britain, but from all over the Commonwealth, occupied Europe and even further afield, with 574 foreign pilots flying with Fighter Command. Top scoring of RAF fighter squadron in the Battle of Britain was the Polish No 303 Squadron, while one of the leading fighter aces, Sailor Malan, was from South Africa. Air Vice Marshal Keith Parker was, of course, from New Zealand. That's my top 10.
Well, I've got to tell you, Tim, another good 10 items for us to discuss there. I didn't know about the Tiger Moths. That was an interesting one. We've been posting a few pictures of Tiger Moths over the last 24 hours, so that has some relevance. And
yeah, I mean, that would have been a one-way mission, wouldn't it? I mean,
you're not coming back at that.
Yeah.
I know we've had a laugh and a joke about the fairy swordfish, but the Tiger Moth, goodness me, bless them. And the other one that stood out for me was the Italians. I didn't realise the Italians had been involved.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of put in by Mussolini, who decided to... quite weirdly, after the Germans had sort of basically cancelled sort of Sea Lion, or it had kind of drifted, been put on indefinite pause. So they came over in October and carried out a couple of raids, using sort of CR-42s, and got hammered and went home again.
Wow. Okay. Well, excellent one. If anyone else has got any comments or feedback for Tim on that, over to our Facebook page or Twitter, of course. Tim, thank you very much for that. We'll take another quick break and then we'll talk some feedback.
This is a message for wives and girlfriends of aircraft enthusiasts. Ladies, we all know your other half has got far too many aviation books and magazines, cluttering up far too much space. So here is a brilliant solution. Encourage him to read The Aviation Historian. You see, it's a journal, a sort of cross between a magazine and a book. So it combines the two, and it's compact format, a bit like National Geographic, so it takes up less space. And it's quarterly, not monthly, so it takes up even less space still. And of course, it will keep him happily occupied for ages. It's not in the shops, so check the website, theaviationhistorian.com, and give yourself some space at last.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
And so, to the get involved and feedback section of the show, it goes without saying we're absolutely flattered by all of the support we've had over the last week to 10 days given to us for the UK Podcast Awards. Of course, for those who don't know, we have been nominated not only for the best in our category, but we've actually been nominated for the best podcast of the year, which sort of stunned us, but we have had some fantastic support from everyone. We are in the final. There's still time to vote, so please do, if you haven't done, show us your support. But we'd also like to send our best wishes to the other finalists. So a little shout out for the others in the final: Inspirational Creatives, the Employment Law and HR Podcast, Beer O'Clock, Meaningful Money, and the Gay Agenda. So good luck to everybody. We're absolutely delighted and flabbergasted to be in the final. So thank you very much to everybody who supported us.
Hi, Peter says, just really, really kind of stoked to be nominated in this in there. And thanks for all your support, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, 12th of September. So please vote for us. As I said, we'll put a link in the show notes for that. And of course, we'll let you all know how we got on. Okay, moving on. Dave V-Force, I posted an article about the use of drones, which had a bit of a nefarious title. It was Voyeur Uses Drone Spy Camera Over Nudist Beach. Now, the reason that I posted this is it is my local beach. Now, I don't participate in the nude bit. I think that'd be too shocking for everybody. But this is getting to be a real invasion of privacy.
Was
now,
that your drone
then? No, it wasn't my drone. But I will say this, we do have our suspicions locally as to who it actually is. Bizarrely, we do.
I think it'd make a great kind of carry on film, wouldn't it? Carry on film, yeah. Like a reboot for the for the noughties of carry on droning. For Isaac and for any people not familiar with carry on films were a very kind of saucy beach type humour comedy films in the 1960s. Lots of sort of lewd comments and smuttiness and Sid James. And obviously, yes. You know, this would be well up their street.
Yes, it would be. Gotcha. Well, Dave V-Force on Twitter, he really jumped in. He said, the thing is, people want privacy. If they see a drone, they question it. If it's over my house, out comes the air gun. He very nearly got hit by a drone at an event, and he described the operator in terms I won't repeat here, so he wanted to smash it up. But it's true, really, you know, to be honest, it really is invading people's space. What's it like for you, Isaac? What's the drones? We listened to David and Max on the UAV Digest, of course, waxing lyrical about everything UAV, but it's hitting everybody now.
Yeah, it is finally, you know, it's hitting mainstream. You could say what you want. At least in this country, the FAA really drug its feet until, you know, getting the rules out for things. And now it's a huge critical mass. We've had things here locally in Seattle about people flying a drone right up to around the Seattle Space Needle area and then coming down, helicopters getting in the way. The big thing here in the western part of the United States is that people are flying drones and getting in the way of aerial firefighter tanker aircraft coming into the area. Because if those drones are up in the air, the tanker aircraft cannot fly and get rid of it. I don't know if you saw that footage it was a couple of weeks ago in down in Southern California, where it was over a free a fire came down over the freeway, and there were drones in the air, and a bunch of cars got burned, literally destroyed, because there was drones in the air, and you know the aircraft could not fly. So that is the U.S. Forest Service now has made these huge push if posters and everything. If you have drones in the air, we can't save your life. You know, that's, you know, bar none. I mean, that's, you know, people have just got to have common sense. And, you know, unfortunately, the public is getting a little slow to be having common sense in dealing when they buy their brand new drones.
So it's a novelty factor, you know, novelty factor. Yes. And also you've got people there who've got no airspace awareness. You know, they buy it from Amazon or buy it online. And, you know, wow, this thing's a cool aerial camera. Gosh, flying this over a nice forest and get good pictures of, you know, a fire, which I want to put on YouTube, is actually going to mean that the fire service or the helicopters can't get in and actually fight the fire. And I think it'll calm down eventually. I think also once the novelty wears off, and also technology, you know, once you can kind of things get sort of like, you know, geo fences in there. You build into the software, and that you can sort of say, you know, this is an airport. If you try and fly your drone over there, it's going to shut down, and it's going to kind of, you know, not go any further.
Yeah, yeah. DJI Phantom now has made it so that has built it in now to their firmware software updates that your drone will just not fly in certain airspaces. It'll automatically shut. You won't even start up. I think Washington D.C. is one of those places for that standpoint, and I imagine it's going to be built in that all airports for that standpoint. Point, we'll have that built into it as well.
I interestingly shared something on Facebook today of how to take drones out, and although it's totally illegal to do that, people are taking events into their own hands now. So you know, we're going to start seeing air rifles, we're going to start seeing shotguns coming out.
Well, and we already have over here in America, Peter.
I suppose that's where I was going. But some of the more ingenious ways of bringing them down are quite interesting, using nets and things like that, catapults and stuff like that.
The new one I saw that was sound waves to take out a drone.
Right, okay. And I haven't seen that one. Interesting. Okay, well, we better move on from my nudist beach story here and Dave V-Force. let's go to competition time. Last week on Facebook and Twitter, we set a Cockpit Friday competition for the best cockpit photo, and the winner is Wendy Bruchel. Wendy, she said she took the picture last Saturday whilst landing at YHM in a 1942 Stearman. She's a classic beauty. So Wendy, DM us and we'll get a little something off to you. Now we are going to set our next major competition with our good friends and supporters, Doug Worrell and Event Fire Solutions. Now, Event Fire Solutions has a subdivision, EFS Medical, so we're giving them a shout out through this competition. For those 1 in 4 of us suffering from anxiety of flight, or in fact just general anxiety, we've got just the book for you. We've got 6 copies of Dragons of Thin Air, A Most Unusual Fear of Flying course. Message us or email us your request for the book. We'll not publish it if you don't want us to. So you can DM us, you can PM us, and we'll make a random selection and send those out to you. So they're there, they're sitting on my shelf right next to me now, waiting to go on. If you want to share your story, though, please do so, because we're trying to help those people who are trying to overcome this fear. It's really interesting, actually. We all look around and think, well, who are these people who are afraid of flying? There's some very, very close people to the show who actually, whilst absolutely passionate about aviation, are afraid of flying. So it's those 1 in 4. It's very common, and we want to help you. So we've got 6 copies of that book to give away. Just contact us and we'll randomly select the 6 to go out. Giveaways continue. Don't forget, we've got our FSX livery, the Extended Airlines livery, and I do have it on good information that should we win the Best Podcast of the Year award, we will have a Concorde livery for Flight Simulator from our good friend Joseph Chung. So he's lining us up, so no pressure on us there, Joe. We've also got ringtones, and of course we've got some screensaver shots as well for you. So some giveaways there. Hope you enjoy some of those.
Aviation Music. long been the domain of the newspapers and magazines.
Well, not anymore. I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran, and we're bringing aviation right into your radio.
Yes, we're making aviation cool and interesting for everyone.
Hang on, aviation's always been cool. Check this out.
How cool is this?
Grant, turn that down. Here at Plane Crazy Down Under, we've got pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, industry leaders, even politicians dropping by to talk to us about the amazing world of aviation right here in Australia and occasionally in New Zealand as well.
Wow, that's cooler than I thought, mate.
Find us at planecrazydownunder.com, on iTunes, or lurking about on other people's podcasts just like this one.
We've got crazy accents and lots of great aviation content.
And we promise not to talk about the cricket.
No, never, not the cricket.
Quack, 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 quack.
Let's move on to promoting aerospace and promoting what's good in the industry. I'll kick one off. Bill Leary, good friend of the show from the Antonov 2 Club at Popham, a small airfield in the UK, sent me a note. Great news, after 3 years stuck on the ground, the Antonov 2, she's nicknamed Big Bird, is ready to fly again. And to celebrate the award of their new Certificate of Airworthiness, there's a number of pre-launch member introductory flights on offer. Now, the first of them, as we record, is today, but they also have some next weekend, Sunday the 16th. So if you're in the UK, you will only have a few days to get over to there. But to fly on an Antonov 2 for £49, I think it's well worth it. So we'll put a link to that in our show notes. Good luck and well done, Bill, for getting that Big Bird back into the air. Tim, any promoting aerospace?
It's a quiet time for the society at the moment, at the Aeronautical Society. But what I can say is September, our events goes back into kind of full swing. So there's a whole load of events happening all around the globe. Some of the highlights are A400M entry into RAF service. That's a HQ lecture. We've got also a branch event in Seattle from the Boeing B-47 Stratojet by the chief test pilot, who's still alive.
There you go, Isaac. So, you need to get out to that.
Yep, absolutely.
We've got flight crew instruction, a lecture on that. We've got hang gliding, remotely piloted vehicles, the Vickers Wellington. Whole lot of stuff going on. So, have a look at our future diary. Have a look, see what's going on there. Plenty of stuff.
And Tim, just to remind everyone, the majority of these lectures are free and are free to everybody. You don't have to be a member, do you?
Yeah. For the lectures, they're free. And for conferences or workshops, seminars, you wouldn't have to pay. But no, obviously, members get a discount.
Okay, it's time to wrap up. We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. You can find Extended on Stitcher.com, UKPodcast.com, ThePodDirectory.com, and of course, iTunes, amongst others. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The program is produced with a Creative Commons license. Tim, where can we find you online?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at RESTimR or the Royal Aeronautical Society, www.aerosociety.com.
And Isaac, just a reminder where we can find you online.
On Twitter, JetCityStar, all one word. And then my website is jetcitystar.blogspot.com.
And Gareth, who has taken to his sick bed, you can find him on Twitter at Gareth_Stringer. And you can find everything about Global Aviation Resource at globalaviationresource.com. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well as facebook.com/XTP Media. So, Tim, Isaac, thank you very much for joining us. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next time.
And it's goodbye from Isaac Alexander.
Good day and good evening to all.
And goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. And remember, stay tuned to this frequency, Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
Yeah, I raced home just to get here on time. So.
Thank you. And so to the get involved and feedback section of the... there you go. First outtake.
No worries.
Oh, dear. Okay. Start that again. Everybody who supported us. And that wasn't supposed to happen either.
That's another outtake.
Okay, sorry about that. It just haunted me.
That was your fault, was it, Isaac?
Well, as it's only me gobbing off, we'll keep that bit in. And you can find Extended on Stitcher.com, UKpodcast.com. Let me start that again, guys. And Gareth, who sadly has left us early to his sick bed, you can find on Twitter at Gareth_.
Understraw?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're taking a stroll through the day. Yes.
I can't get it. I can't spit it out. And I haven't had a glass of wine either. So, Tim, Gareth... what is going on today? I've got it written in front of me. This isn't hard.
Extend it.
This is XTP Media.